This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Today we'll be putting a few common family law questions under the microscope, questions we believe many people have asked themselves at one point or another. For example, if I get married, does that mean I automatically am entitled to half of everything? Or if my partner was unfaithful, surely that means they receive less in a property settlement? Well, to help clear up the uncertainty, I'm joined by the managing partner, Sally Nichols of Nichols Family Lawyers. Sal, thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Warren. It's great to be here. And you're absolutely right. These questions come up all the time, particularly at those dinner parties that I go to. And unfortunately, quite a few people actually make some big decisions based on myths rather than facts. So we need to fix that up.
All right. Well, let's do that. Let's kick things off with the first one I mentioned. If I get married, does that mean I automatically get half of everything?
That is a really common misconception, Warren. A lot of people assume that once you're married, everything just gets split down the middle if you separate. It might be based on some of those Californian movies, because I think that might be the case there. But it's not how family law works in Australia. The court doesn't use a strict 50-50 formula. Actually, there's no formula. It's a range of outcomes, and it applies a five-step process to figure out what's fair. So the court first decides whether it's even necessary to divide property. And if it is, the next step is to value all the assets owned by the parties, whether it's held that with them jointly or individually. And often people say, but it's all in trust. That doesn't matter. It's if one of the parties controls the trust, then that's considered ownership. So then the property can be divided amongst the parties, and they range from motor vehicles, household chattels, company shares and trusts. And step three is about contributions, both financial, income, non-financial. And then the court looks at each person's future needs, things like age, health, earning capacity. And finally, the court makes a decision that's just and equitable, meaning fair in all the circumstances. So no case is the same, and it's based on your expertise and ability to distill those facts through that five-step process. So no mathematical formula for those accountants who like those formulas.
Thanks, Sal. Here's another one I've heard a lot. If we're still living under the same roof, does that mean we're not actually separated?
That's actually not true, and it's a really important one to clarify. So the Family Law Act recognises that couples can be separated even if they continue to live under the same roof. And in fact, the Act specifically provides that parties may be considered to have separated and to be living separately and apart, even if they're still residing in the same home or performing some household duties for one another.
That's really interesting. So I can imagine this is becoming more common these days with the rising cost of living. It's getting harder for people to move out, even after they're separated. And we all know family law issues can be pretty emotional, and there's often a lot of complexity involved. That said, here's another common misconception that I've heard. If one partner's been unfaithful, does that mean they'll get a smaller share of the property settlement? Is that actually how it works?
Oh, gosh, I think the big bad days of fault divorce, I think that it's back in the 70s. And when I first started working in this area, I remember some of the elderly lawyers said those were the days where they had people jumping into hotel rooms with cameras and things like that. And what was actually really sad about that is that some people had to make up a fault, because it just was the fact that the marriage had irretrievably broken down. So Australia is a no-fault jurisdiction, and this means that that whether it's infidelity or anything else, it doesn't play a role in the division of assets. Instead, as we discussed earlier, the court is focused on things like contributions that each party made and future needs, not whether somebody actually cheated. There has been a little bit of a change in relation to family violence, which is sadly, as we know, so prevalent, and whether or not that's actually impacted on contributions and people's financial needs, that's just come into property division as of the 10th of June. So just recently, that's an area. There's also another exception when it comes to wastage of marital assets. So if one party deliberately or recklessly reduces the value of the property, like gambling, for example, it could impact on the share of property settlement.
We're chatting with Sally Nichols, Managing Partner at Nichols Family Lawyers, about some of the biggest myths in family law. So, Sal, if someone has spent a large amount of money recklessly, for example, that could affect the final property settlement?
Exactly. So the law views any intentional or reckless spending that harms the property pool as negative contributions. So it's known as wastage. It's very different from normal living expenses, which are considered reasonable. But wastage is someone spending really excessively or unnecessarily, and it can significantly reduce the pool of assets available for division. For example, if one spouse has been gambling large sums of money, and I've had a couple of those cases, and they're so sad, making bad investments or indulging in luxury purchases without justification, that could be considered waste.
So if one person is responsible for wasting marital assets, how does that affect the settlement then, Sal?
Well, the court would take that wastage it's found to be proved seriously. And if they find that a party has engaged in wasteful spending like gambling, they can adjust the property settlement accordingly. So the value of the wasted assets might be added back into the property pool, or the court just might award the innocent party a larger share of the remaining assets. So the court's got a discretion to determine how best to deal with the wastage on the facts of the case.
Now, Sal, I've got a good one for you. Speaking of relationships and the myths surrounding them, let's address something that's, I suppose, come up a lot more recently, especially with the popularity of shows like Married at First Sight. Now, there's a lot of curiosity around marriage and divorce laws. For example, can you legally get married at first sight in Australia? Wouldn't that be a great feeling if you just walked down the street and said, I knew that they were the one?
There's a few movies with that in, I think. I think there are a lot of hallucinogenic drugs. I can't even pronounce that today. But while Married at First Sight might make it look like you can just show up and get married, that's not how it works under Australian law. To be legally recognised, a marriage must meet several requirements. So firstly, both parties must not be married to someone else or be immediate family members, Warren. They must be at least 18 years old or between 16 and 18 with court approval. They also need to understand the meaning of the marriage and must freely consent to the union using specific words during the ceremony. Here's the part that undermines the premise of the show. The law requires a notice of intended marriage to be submitted to the celebrant at least 1 month before the ceremony. So the idea of just showing up and marrying on the spot is not legally feasible. Sorry to spoil that for everybody.
It's quite surprising.
But particularly my mum. It's her favourite show.
Is it really?
Oh, she's obsessed.
It definitely undermines, I suppose, the spontaneity of the show, though, doesn't it? But speaking of relationship structures, there's another growing area of curiosity, and that is polyamorous relationships. More and more people are asking about the legalities around these types of relationships. With that said, another misconception is if I'm in a polyamorous relationship, I can't be subject to property division under family law. Sal, where do we stand?
Yes, I think you and I had a chat about that some time ago. It's really interesting because the laws changed some time ago to allow somebody to be actually married and in a de facto relationship at the same time, or you can be in two de facto relationships at the same time. And if you are, then you're actually entitled to a settlement. So the key question becomes whether your relationship with a particular person meets the legal definition of a de facto relationship. So I can clearly perceive that if you look at the elements, are you in a sexual relationship? Are you presenting as a couple to the rest of the world? Are you blending finances? I do believe that is possible.
So it's more about the substance of the relationship rather than the structure of the relationship. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. So if two people in a polyamorous relationship have lived together on a genuine domestic basis, as I said, shared finances, raised children together, or presented themselves as a couple, the court may find that a de facto relationship exists, regardless of how many people are involved in the broader relationship structure. And there are cases where there are secret de facto relationships going, and so it can be quite complicated, so we have to focus on that substance. And so if that's the case and the relationships break down, property division could very much come into play. So being in a polyamorous relationship doesn't exempt someone from legal obligations or entitlements under family law. So take away all the fun.
Let's get to some of the questions that have come in on 0427 569 949. Nina in Carlton says, if I paid for most things during a relationship, will I get more in the settlement?
Really interesting, Nina, because what will actually come into play is the length of your relationship. If it's a really short relationship, the court might place more emphasis, not dollar for dollar, but more emphasis on your greater financial contributions. What's interesting, if you've been in a long-term relationship, and I'm saying, you know, 15 to 20 years, that you might have actually contributed more financially, but your partner has actually been the major homemaker and has contributed in non-financial ways, the length of the relationship begins to offset the greater financial contributions. But if you've been in a short relationship, there's more emphasis placed on the financial contributions.
There you go, Nina. Jared in Footscray says, we've separated but still live together for the kids. Will the court count us truly separated?
Really interesting. I think that that's when there probably needs to be an open understanding to the rest of the world. Obviously, in terms of making it clear to kids as well that you're separated, we often advise clients in those circumstances to talk to psychologists and counsellors. But yes, as long as it's open to the rest of the world, and I think sometimes there can even be an exchange of letters just to actually agree to the fact that you're separated, and to get some clarity on that point. And as we were saying before, it's quite common.
Leanne in Brighton says, can my ex claim part of my inheritance in a property settlement? That's a good question.
Oh, it's such a good question, and it comes up quite a bit. Again, too, we're looking at the length of the relationship and timing of that inheritance, so, and the size of the pool. So say you inherit $1 million and the size of your asset pool is about $500,000, and you inherit after separation, so separation can be really important to establish, then it might be that the other partner who hasn't got the inheritance gets a lion's share of the asset pool, because you've immediately after separation, there's a large financial resource. So they might not get any of the million, but they might get a larger share, the $500,000. If the inheritance came right at the start of the relationship and you've been together for 20 or 30 years and that's happened, again, like the greater financial contribution we talked about, other contributions might offset it depending on its size and how it was actually applied. One way to protect inheritances is actually to have a prenup, or what we call binding financial agreement, that actually can quarantine inheritances. So that's a thought. So I've done that a few times. So when I've acted for people where there's a lot of family wealth, again, not super romantic concept, but sometimes people want to make sure that any family inheritances are actually quarantined from a future breakdown, which is really interesting. So the parties actually build up things together. It will be divided as arranged in the prenup. But as long as someone's aware of the size of the inheritance, it can actually be quarantined.
Finally, Ash in St Kilda. This is kind of a sad question. My partner spent heaps of our money on crypto and lost it.
We've
now split.
No.
What happens then?
Well, it'd be really interesting to see in terms of whether that investment was reckless or whether it was reasonable to think that it was a worthy investment. So I think that's what we would have to look at it in terms of whether the court would see it, I've heard that before, as wastage. There have been people who have had windfalls, and so sometimes you get the windfalls and sometimes you have to take the losses, but it's whether or not it was reckless and done in a way that actually would be considered wastage.
So I've loved unpacking some of the most common myths around marriage, separation and property settlement. It's been great having you on today.
It's fun. Always happy to do it.
We'll chat to you next month. That's Sally Nichols, Managing Partner at the family law firm Nichols Family Lawyers.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.